Times. I'm Artie Moskowain. It has been a long and cold and snowy and icy and windy winter, and it's not over yet. Looking around the region, it's clear that the weather has wreaked havoc on trees and bushes. Fallen trees, broken limbs, and debris are a common sight in many, if not most, neighborhoods. So what to do? Should you have that broken tree cut down and hauled away, or can it be salvaged? Why did some trees survive intact while others were more vulnerable? How do trees protect themselves from weather extremes, and what can be done to prepare for spring and the next winter? Well, help is on the way. Information you can use to maintain and care for your trees and your shrubs. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jason Lubar is Associate Director of Urban Forestry at Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania. And Jason Lubar, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here, Marty.
And I should also add, he is a board-certified master arborist. And also with us is Mindy Maslin, Project Manager of the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society's Tree Tenders Program. In fact, founded that program 21 years ago. And Mindy Maslin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
And to our listeners, and we know you want to call us because we've already had a lot of buzz about our conversation today. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Jason, let me begin with you. Is it the cold winter, the long winter, the windy winter, the icy winter, the snowy winter? What is the toughest part of winter when it comes to trees?
Well, all of the above, really. But this year, we've seen heavy, wet snow collect on the trees and then a layer of ice adding weight to the trees. So they've had a tough time holding that weight, and we see a lot of breakage, a lot of tree failure. So that's really been the problem this winter. Less than a year ago, or about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, Sandy. High winds, wet soils, and we had a lot of tree failures then. But that was really soil failures. When the tree pulls out of the ground and pulls its roots up, the root plate up with it, that's not a failure of the tree. It's a failure of the soil since it's so wet. So we've had two major storms within about a year.
Well, and Mindy, all you have to do is just look around. I mean, I've lived here a long time, and it just seems like every neighborhood, almost every street, you see branches and debris and sometimes mm-hmm. whole trees.
Yeah, especially the trees that are multi-stem or the pine trees that have their needles that can hold more of the snow and ice. It's been devastating for them.
And why, we were talking about this before going on the air, but why things like pine trees? Well, why have they been so at risk this winter?
Well, I think it's the structure of the needles and the branches that they just aren't designed to hold that kind of weight. They can hold a certain amount, but with snow, with storm after storm, and then, as Jason said, the ice on top of it, the weight really made it unmanageable mm. for them.
Is there something the way we plant our trees, though, that make them more vulnerable?
Well, think about the way pine trees evolved. They evolved growing together. So they had smaller canopies that were at the top of the tree. Now we plant them out in our landscapes, which is great, but now they have all this energy from the sun, and they just grow everywhere, and they grow long limbs, and those limbs just get weighted down. And we call that a lever arm. In other words, if you hold a can of paint, it's really heavy. If you try holding it away from your body, you can hardly hold it up. There's a lot of stress on your shoulder. But if you move that paint can closer to your body, you're able to hold it longer. So these pine trees, in essence, are holding those paint cans way away from their body, and they're under a lot of stress, and that's why we see breakage from ice and snow.
And there's always the question, Mindy, whether to essentially get rid of the tree or whether you can salvage a tree. Is there any way to know that, I guess, without even looking at a tree, which I'm asking you to do?
Well, when you're looking at a tree and evaluating it for its overall health, most trees that are healthy are going to be able to survive basic conditions. There's always the breaking point,
right.
Of course. When trees are planted more in a group, they can protect themselves. So it's that community that supports the trees and stops the elements from hitting it so difficultly. Mm. The it's hard to say what tree is going to make it and not, just without any other details, just by species.
Right.
But we know that some species are more tolerant of these conditions.
Such as?
And, well, as our zone changes, we're finding that we're moving into conditions that are harsher and harsher. So trees, other kinds of evergreens that grow in the north that are more apt to handle these kinds of issues are, that's what you'd want to, so examples of that, help me out with some examples, Jason,
Go
of
ahead,
some of
Jason.
The other.
Well, trees like honey locust, they can withstand heat island conditions better, things like that. So as climate change happens, we have to adjust our species choice based on that. It hasn't changed all that much recently, mm-hmm. but we're looking 10, 100, you know, 500 years in the future, what the climate's going to be like. Because hopefully trees have a long lifespan here. And what they're doing is coming up with different varieties to better adapt to our urban setting, like sugar maple. Sugar maple grows up north. It doesn't do well here. It's
is
hot
that right?
down here. Yeah, it grows here, but it doesn't do well. And what they're coming up with is varieties that have thicker leaves that can actually withstand urban conditions better. So we are coming up with these new tree varieties for urban areas that can tolerate the stresses that our cities give to trees.
Well, I was thinking about, I mean, even just walking around Philadelphia, I mean, it's great to see trees, but sometimes when you see them sort of, you know, planted in the middle of a sidewalk, you just mm-hmm. wonder, how is that tree going to do?
Yes, yeah, so often you need to start by planting the right tree in the right spot and planting it the right way. And that, more than anything, is going to determine how the tree is going to fare in the future. So picking a tree that is, you're looking at what the future height, what the form of that tree will be, what kind of soil needs it has, what kind of light it likes. And then looking at the site to see, is this site a site that has overhead wires? So you can't plant anything that's going to grow into that, where then the utility companies will be forced to come in and cut them. You want to look at, is there a wind tunnel? Are there issues where the tree is too close to a building to plant something that's not a columnar form, a form that grows like a column? And then are there buses and trucks that are going to be passing by? One thing that people sometimes don't know is that when a tree has a branch that, when you plant it, it's 6 feet off the ground.
Right.
When that tree grows another 20 feet, that branch will still be 6 feet off the ground. And that impacts impacts the pruning that you'll have to do on that tree initially to get it so that it can withstand people walking on the sidewalk past it, and you know they don't want branches hitting them in the face or car doors or cars.
What about wind? I mean, is wind a particular problem for trees, Jason?
Well, as I said, if they're growing together, and that's how they evolve, growing together, and the wind, the trees growing together, pushed the wind up over the tree. So each individual tree didn't have that much exposure to the wind. Now we plant them in streets where wind tunnels, as Mindy mentioned, the buildings funnel the wind down, and it can magnify the wind, you know, by a factor of one or two. And we've seen trees actually get blown over by the wind tunnels, by the wind coming down, swirling around the buildings.
Wow.
So, as Mindy said, when you look at your tree, when you look at the site, one of the things you should look for is that wind exposure. You know, do you have a windy area? Can a tree survive there? Will it fall over if you plant it? So all these things are considerations that you have to look for when you plant a tree.
It's been a very icy winter, as we know, and you see people throwing salt.
Oh, man.
And, I know. I touched a nerve here with Mindy Maslin, but I know people that care about trees and bushes worry about, I guess, what's being tossed on the streets or even tossed on the sidewalks. How bad is salt for trees?
Well, I read that PennDOT is close to 1 million tons of rock salt that they've put out this season, which is horrible for, you know, so many reasons, and, you know, not the least of which is what gets into our rivers. But what gets into the soil and our tree pits is really devastating for trees.
So it and makes them more vulnerable?
It does. It desiccates the root system. It stops them from being able to take up enough water. And so they're okay for now, but when they wake up in the spring, when they start to draw up water again and break out their new buds, that's when it's going to hit them. That's when that salt's going to start entering their system. And at that point, the most important thing that people can do is flush out the salt as much as possible.
Just take a hose if you can or something?
Yeah. We generally say for newly planted trees, you want to water 15, 20 gallons once a week. To flush out, you might want to do that 3 days in a row.
Oh, interesting.
Or maybe more.
You want to add
right.
to that?
Right, especially in the spring. And, rock salt's one of those things that we have to live with. We have to keep our streets clear of ice because it's a liability issue. So when usually the trees are asleep and it doesn't affect them that much and we have rains and snows and the salt is a natural element. It flows into our rivers and streams. In the wintertime, it doesn't matter that much. But as Mindy said, in the springtime, when things start to live again, that's when salt can really affect them. And as homeowners, there are different types of salts you can get that don't affect trees like rock salt does. Magnesium stearate, things like that. You can go to Home Depot and ask for these products. They may be a little more expensive, but they won't burn your shrubs, your grasses, your trees like rock salt will.
Well, and I'm assuming trees being trees, they know what to do when winter. I sound so stupid saying this. It's like I'm in third grade and just learning this. But the trees, there are things that trees do in the winter to protect themselves, not just getting rid of their leaves, but other things as well, I'm assuming.
Well, they don't. What they do is basically go to sleep, which scientifically they go into a dormant state. The roots still grow, actually, until the soil gets around to 45, 42 degrees, something like that, and then even the roots stop growing and the trees go to sleep. So they're not deciduous trees are not actively photosynthesizing.
Right.
However, evergreen trees like the pines, like Leyland cypress, things like that, they're still photosynthesizing. So if their roots are active, they can get burned much more easily by salt than the deciduous trees, the trees that lose their leaves.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about trees in this hour of Radio Times. Why? Because looking around the region here, it's clear that trees and even some bushes have taken a big beating because of our long and cold and icy and windy winter we've been having. Talking with Jason Lubar, Associate Director of Urban Forestry at Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania. He's a board-certified master arborist. Also with us is Mindy Maslin, Project Manager of the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society's Tree Tenders Program. She founded that program 21 years ago. It trains volunteers who work in neighborhoods in and around Philadelphia caring for trees. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We're going to take those calls, those tweets, those emails after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Orchestra presents Mozart's Requiem, Saturday, March 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 9th at 3 p.m. Often referred to as his swan song, Mozart's final composition, Requiem, remains one of his most popular works. Introducing the newly formed Allentown Symphony Chorus. Also, cellist Christine Lampria will be featured in Barber's Cello Concerto. Information at millersymphonyhall.org. The Allentown Symphony Orchestra proudly supports WHYY.
One of the biggest myths in America is that lawns need to be chemically drenched to look good. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the timings that make two light feedings all that any turf requires, plus answers to an especially large selection of your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, Season 4 of Portlandia debuts this week. We will talk with the creators, Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein.
My most favorite episode we've done is actually going to be the finale of Season 4.
Yeah, same here. It's about the concept of being away from a place.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, again talking with Mindy Maslin and Jason Lubar about trees, how to care for trees, how to deal with the trees that have been beat up by our long and cold and icy and snowy and windy weather we've been having this winter. And one of the things that we were talking about during the break, we were talking about the tree, I guess an evergreen that seems to do well in the region, and both of our guests said a Norway spruce is a tree to think about. Do I have that right, Jason?
Right, because Norway spruce evolved with these heavy snow loads up in the mountains, and so the architecture, the branches, sort of downward facing, so they're able to put up with the snow and the ice loading, whereas as we've seen, the white pines with their more or less horizontal branches break off.
Sort of like with the paint bucket
exactly.
Example. And also, Minnie, you were talking about just the safety issues. If let's say there's a tree that's fallen in your yard or in your neighborhood, the kind of safety features you need to keep in mind.
Yeah, for sure. Safety first. You want to make sure when you're looking at a fallen tree that it isn't leaning on any wires, because those wires could be live, and by touching the tree, you could be putting yourself into a hazardous position. Mm-hmm. So for one, check for wires. For two, check for what we call widowmakers, which are those big branches that are hanging in the tree that, as you start moving things along, could fall on you. And if you see,
hurt you or worse.
Yeah. And so if you see any of those, if you're in the city, if it's city property, you can call 311 or probably an arborist. And make sure that you don't look to take on something that's bigger than you can really handle.
And go ahead. No, go ahead.
Also, as far as safety is concerned, if the storm is still going on and you're trying to clean up branches and it's still snowing or icing, don't do it, because those branches have fallen, and so there's a higher likelihood that other branches are going to fall during the storm, and you could be working under them. Mm-hmm. Safety is always a big consideration in our business, and so whatever you do, if you do any work on your own on trees, safety is the number one concern.
We have an email from Hillary. She said, we lost a birch tree due to the weather, broken half. It's leaning on the roof of our garage, not a big tree. The tree also lost a large branch. In the past several years, we've had to remove trees due to disease. Some kind of blight would kill the tree, especially the top of it. Is there anything that can be done about it? And perhaps I'll toss that back to you, Jason.
Well, the first thing is to get a professional arborist to come and look at the tree. And really, they have to inspect the tree and then advise the client on what the best action is. Is it full tree removal because the tree isn't adapted to that site? And the arborist can also suggest other trees that would be better adapted. Or there are some diseases going around that they can treat and bring the tree back to biological health.
Please, go ahead.
And I'd like to add to that also that when you're hiring an arborist, there are some things to look for. You want to make sure that you have an ISA, International Society of Arboriculture certified arborist, like Jason, that they have insurance, and that they have references. Uh-huh. You want to make sure that you talk to them about the techniques that they're planning to use before you hire them. For instance, if somebody comes and says they're going to top your tree, they're going to take off limbs just kind of in the middle of the branch to reduce the size of it. That's a procedure that is not horticulturally recommended.
Oh, really?
And it can basically what it does is the tree will put out sprouts from each of those cuts that are weakly attached and will present future falling hazards.
Hmm.
And so it's just it's something to keep in mind that all arborists aren't created equal.
Well, I hear that. But I'm also, I have seen these trees that are literally look broken in half. I guess some are salvageable.
Well, you
and
could,
some are not?
Right. You could restore them by some trees respond to cutting them at the base and resprouting, and you train those resprouts into new trees. So some can be salvaged, some just can't. And it depends on what tree it is, what species it is, what condition it's in. And that's why all your listeners should be educated about trees. And one of the ways we can do this is there's a wonderful website, treesaregood.org, all one word. And there is a wealth of information about trees, tree care on that website.
And why do we need a website that said that trees are good? I mean, who thinks trees aren't good?
Well, it's easy to remember, it's easy to remember, easy to get to. And as I said, the information there is great for homeowners because it's aimed at lay people who don't have that in-depth knowledge about trees. And if we say things that people don't quite understand at home, they can go on treesaregood.org and find out more information about those topics.
Let me get that. Looks like Linda from Downingtown to join our conversation. And Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
You're
We're
welcome.
Getting ready for the next ice storm on Monday. But
yeah.
My question is this. Is there a difference, and you touched on it earlier, between let's say all trees are created equal in the sense that you have two very healthy trees, and one's a hardwood and one's a softwood. Would, in our neighborhood, it looked like a lot of the hardwoods, the maples and the walnuts, took huge hits this past ice storm, whereas some of the softer trees that seemed to be able to bend and yield, and I'm not referring to white pines or anything, tended not to lose limbs. If they're both created equally in that health genre, does either one stand to last better than another in an ice storm?
Well, Linda, let me see what Mindy Maslin has to say. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, trees, there are trees that grow faster than others. So softwood trees tend to grow faster than hardwood trees, and people like them because they can make a statement faster.
Right.
Are
they more vulnerable? I mean, are they more...
The softwood trees would be more vulnerable.
They're more bendy?
Well, they'd be more vulnerable because they put on so much wood quickly that it's not as strong a structure
as a hardwood tree.
As the hardwood trees, generally speaking.
Yeah.
Again, it depends on whether you're picking a tree whether your trees are tolerant of the kinds of snow, and a lot of that has to do with the structure of the tree. So a tree that's multi-stemmed, that has a wider base, that's gonna hold more. That's gonna have more snow and ice collect on it. And it probably would be like a birch tree.
But, you know, we live in a region where we also now get these very hot summers. So we've been focusing on very cold and icy and windy winter. But, you know, who knows what it's going to be like in August. But trees have to withstand a lot of heat and humidity as well.
Right. And they can do that as long as they have adequate water. They're happy, and once the temperature gets to be too warm, they actually shut down their processes, the photosynthetic processes, and they do this to protect themselves. So trees are self-regulating. However, what we do to them, how we prune them, could predispose these trees to failure. Driving down here, I noticed a lot of the failures had decay behind them, decay pockets. So they were less weakly attached. The branches had problems up front. The strong branches survived, and the branches that had weak junctions or had decay behind them failed because they weren't as structurally strong.
And what does that decay look like? I mean, if someone were looking at the trees in their backyard, what would they be looking for?
Well, you look for open pockets that you can see into. Also, sharp forks. A fork is where the branch hits the trunk, and if that's a V, that's a much weaker joint because what happens is the bark gets between the branch and the tree, and it almost forces the tree apart. And it's not a strong attachment. And I think people know what a good branch attachment is coming out laterally from the tree.
Right.
But if you prune trees wrong, they can have these V-shaped forks that are much weaker than the regularly shaped forks.
Do you want to add to that, Mindy? Go ahead.
I'll just add that, you know, knowing how to look at trees and the initial pruning procedures, it's hard to explain that over the radio. We do on the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society website have videos for homeowners on how to prune trees, how to plant them properly. and how to do basic maintenance, like mulch correctly, not do mulch volcanoes, which is the bane of my existence.
I knew we were going to talk about this. I figured tree people feel that way about it.
So that's phsonline.org. You could just go to the tree tender page of that website and find information, these videos.
Let me quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Mindy Maslin, project manager of the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society's Tree Tenders Program. She founded that program, began it 21 years ago. Also with us is Jason Lubar, Associate Director of Urban Forestry at the Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania. He's a board-certified master arborist. And yes, we are talking about trees in this hour of Radio Times. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And Mindy, since you mentioned the volcanoes, and I'm assuming in spring we're going to see, as people, I guess, remulch their yards, we're going to see these volcanoes. Tell us why they should not do that.
Well, hopefully we won't see these volcanoes. And part of the tree tender training that we run is how to plant trees properly, because it's not just the right tree in the right spot, but it's the right way. So it's making sure that initially the tree is planted so that the root flare, the part where the trunk ends and the roots begin, is at the surface of the soil. And that after it's, and that there aren't any girdling roots growing around in a circle, which if you don't have a strong root system that's planted so that the roots are spreading in all directions, you're not going to have a stable tree.
Right.
You're going to have a tree that's much more apt to fall over in a big wind or with extra weight. Then the mulching part. And mulch is critical. It's sort of, it's chicken soup for trees. It's the miracle drug for trees. A lot of people want to fertilize their tree when they first plant it, but fertilizer is more of a prescription drug than a plant food, and it shouldn't be administered without an arborist or without a soil test at least. But mulch will release these nutrients into the soil slowly, and it helps to moderate the temperature of the soil, and it keeps weed whackers and lawnmowers away and does all these great things. But it has to be applied correctly. So we do a 3-3-3 method, no more than 3 inches thick of mulch, 3 feet wide if you can, or larger for a big tree, and 3 inches from the trunk so that it doesn't end up falling on and burning that root flare.
And what's a good mulch?
Good mulch is wood chips that have been sitting out for at least a year. A lot of townships and municipalities offer free leaf mulch. You can just go and get it, and that's great because that's been digested and the nutrients are more available. And it's the way I always think of it is trees evolved 340 million years with the trunk above ground and the roots below ground.
This is basic tree stuff here.
People bury the above-ground part in mulch. Of course the tree is going to suffer because it didn't evolve to have that. So proper mulching is key.
Let me get, looks like Donald from Phoenixville to join us. And Donald, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I work on a lot of gardens as a horticulturist and wondered if your guest could talk about, we've been talking a lot about what's failing above ground. Wonder if they would talk a little bit about how planting these trees out in open lawns where mowers are constantly compacting soils, and we're now with the turf grass, we're changing the soil from bacterial laden to fungal laden, and you know how that's impacting these trees in terms of them failing, falling over, and just the overall health of the root zone.
Well, Donald, I have to say you're getting a lot of nods as you're talking. I'm going to toss that first to you, Jason.
And we do a lot of presentations, and one of the main things is what you don't see, the roots underground. They're so important to the tree. And having a good root structure almost assures that the above-ground part of the tree will be happy. So, yes, there is a lot of maladies, and it starts when the trees are first grown in the nursery industry, and sometimes the problems get magnified as they're grown, and then people who plant these trees plant them incorrectly. They're too deep in the root ball, and then they plant grass around them. And trees did not evolve with grass. Grass is, as you said, Donald, a bacterial-based life form, and trees are fungal-based. And so we have these two seemingly different types of life forms fighting it out on your front lawn, and of course trees are going to suffer. And that's why we say mulch as wide as areas you can. And it may be great to just remove the grass from the tree area totally and plant woodland plants there and mulch it and make it into, say, a woodland patch. And the tree will much better respond to that than constant mowing.
We have actually an email from Ellen, who lives in the Valley Forge area, saying a lot of the maples have been dying. Is this from disease? Could they comment on this? Do you know of any particular problem dealing with maples around here? Yes, no?
Not any specific to maple. We do have a number of bugs that are coming our way that are kind of scary, especially the emerald ash borer. But not so much a maple. I mean, it might be you always want to look, and like the last caller commented on, you always want to look at what's happening underground, what's happening around the trunk area of the tree. To do an evaluation of the whole structure of the tree is critical.
Let's get Linda from, looks like Abington, to join our conversation. Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
The reason I'm calling is I want to share something that happened at my house and ask if your guests have any recommendations. We moved to Abington. It's a first-ring suburb, and one of the things I liked most about it is that we have these great, big, beautiful, old trees on my property, and we have about 12 of these trees. About a year and a half ago, we had one of these trees. I guess what I always tell people is the trees didn't know I was such a tree lover, and they got mad at me. And one of the trees threw down a branch at my house, and it came down like a toothpick through a sandwich. The branch itself was 24 inches in diameter. Wow. And it came right through the house. And luckily, no one was home. No one got hurt. But the tree itself, when you looked at it, it had leafed out. It didn't have any problems. It didn't have any visible dead spots. And, you know, so I felt like we didn't have any warning that, so when they came and cut down the tree, it was surprising to me that there was a hole all of the inside of the tree. It seemed like 60% of the inside of the tree was hollowed out. This was an oak tree. So I guess my question is in two parts. I love my trees. I would like to plant another tree. And how can you tell if one of your trees is going dead inside?
Well, let me toss that. Jason, we're almost up in a break here, but how can you tell?
A certified arborist, somebody who does tree risk assessment, can tell. They're trained in looking for these signs. Trees can't talk to us, but they can communicate us through visual signs. So somebody who is trained in recognizing those signs can look at the tree and see if there's issues, and then we can inspect the tree. A lot of people look at us because we hammer trees. Just like a doctor percusses your thorax, we hammer trees, and we can hear these hollow spots and pits, and we can see these fungal conchs that sometimes the fungus appears at the base. So you have to know what you're looking for, and you can see it. But sometimes trees do not give us warning before they fail, and that's just the way it is.
But I'm assuming a hollowed-out tree is a tree that was in big trouble.
Not necessarily. Nature hollows out trees, and it doesn't mean that it's in big trouble.
Ooh, well, let me take a short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about trees, caring for trees, and that's Jason Lubar. Also with us, Mindy Maslin, and we have a whole bunch of callers waiting to join us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania Post-Baccalaureate Studies supports WHYY. The customizable Penn Post-Bac program offers students the chance to explore a new career field, prepare for a graduate program, or learn something new. Full part-time day and evening classes are available. An information session featuring Post-Bac and summer course offerings will be held on campus Tuesday, March 4th at 5:30 p.m. Details at www.upenn.edu/postbac.
On the next Fresh Air, Reconsidering the Cosmos. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson will host a 13-part series on Fox TV, recalling Carl Sagan's 1980 series about the wonders of the universe. We'll talk about space exploration, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, the unsolved mysteries of the universe, and Tyson's remarkable career. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Unnatural smells from extracting natural gas.
I'm having nosebleeds. I have headaches. There's a chemical smell in the air. My kids are sick. I think it's being caused by this industry.
A possibly devastating air pollution threat in gas-rich Texas, and the best the politicians can do is hold their noses. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and talking to Mindy Maslin, project manager of the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society's Tree Tenders Program. She founded that 21 years ago, and it's a program that trains volunteers who work in neighborhoods in and around Philadelphia caring for trees. Also with us, Jason Lubar, Associate Director of Urban Forestry at Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania, and he is a board-certified master arborist. And we have calls coming in, and we have emails as well, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Coaim. In fact, Mindy, we have an email from Pamela, who lives in Chester County. She wants to go native, and I guess to plant trees that are native to this region. What should she think about?
Well, that's a great way to go. Native is really important. It's important for species, for birds. Boy, there was a report that I heard that there is 200% more bugs on a native oak than there are on some exotic species. And so for birds, that's critical. That's a critical mainstay of their diet. The climate has changed a lot, and our environment isn't what it was when 200 years ago, and let alone a few thousand or a million. And the plants that grow here that can grow here now are different than what once grew here. Mm. So the salt damage, the problems with compaction of soil, even out in the counties, there's not as many native species that are doing as well. And while we should plant as our mainstay natives, you don't want to cut down on the variety of species that you plant, especially with bugs coming in that attack various kinds of trees. Mm. And we don't want to repeat problems that we've had where entire neighborhoods have lost their elm trees and been denuded of everything. So in some ways, to plant a variety. And what do we like?
Yeah, I was going to say, in a changing environment, what's native anymore?
Well, I mean, a native goes with, how far out, what's the native to our region. I'm a fan of the red maples. I like the white and red and bur oaks an awful lot. For smaller trees, Cornus florida, the flowering dogwood, or eastern redbud. You want to stay away from, you can't plant ash anymore because of the emerald ash borer that is fastly coming in our area. It's already been found in Pennsylvania, even in Montgomery and I think Bucks counties.
Oh, wow.
And it probably is in Philadelphia, but we haven't seen it yet. Cowrie pear is a tree that is notorious for losing limbs, so there's a lot of bad ones out there.
Do you want to add any to the good list, Jason? Then we'll get back to our callers.
Well, just that natives, going native is a great thing because it really helps the food web. But if you're looking for something like screening, we have a limited amount of native evergreens. So therefore, you might not be able to go native for those things. But going native is a great choice.
Let me see what looks like Don from Northeast Philadelphia has to say. Don, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you, Marty, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First, I want to give a shout out to Mindy. I am a graduate of her Tree Tenders program.
You go.
Awesome.
And really enjoyed it a great deal.
That's great.
Thank you,
and,
Don.
And a quick question. I have a small ornamental Japanese maple that is under the drip line of my roof, and I've noticed, particularly this year, there was this large ice accumulation that encompassed several branches, And every time I saw it, I was so tempted just to, like, take a hammer and break it and to free the branches up, but I was afraid I would damage the tree. What's the best way to handle something like that?
Well, Don, I'm going to toss your question over to Mindy.
Hi, Don. So I think that that is something that you can do if you can do it carefully. The best thing is to you want to make sure that you're holding on to the branch as much as possible so that you're not going to do any more damage. We actually did that to a little tree that we had too this past week. It's good to go. People ask about sweeping the snow off of trees, and again, that's something that, you know, if you're going to shake a tree too hard, that's going to be a problem. But sweeping it off would be good.
Don, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We've kind of ignored bushes and shrubs here, but you know, I see azaleas and others that are kind of hunkering down under big mountains of snow and ice. Will they spring back to life?
They can spring back to life. If you really want to protect your shrubs, if you have prize shrubs, you can tie them up, put burlap around them, and tie them up in preparation for a winter like we've had or we're having.
Yes.
But usually they'll come back to life. A lot of evergreen trees as well, like you'll see red cedars just leaning over now, and they'll pop back up. And if they don't, it's because probably their branches are broken, and then you can prune these to have new growth.
Let me see what Dale from Landenberg has to say. Dale, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, thanks. Kind of a big picture science question for
sure.
The panelists. I've heard reports that because of the things we've done to the air, we've added more acids to the air from burning fossil fuels, that we've made the soil different, that it gives off more nitrates and makes the plants, particularly trees, grow less lignin, grow less strong. Have you heard that, or is that true?
I'm going to toss that to our master arborist here. What do you think, Jason?
Well, there is a nitrification that's coming from the atmosphere, but I don't think it's a problem yet. Nitrogen is it's hard for plants to get nitrogen because they can't take in pure N2, dinitrogen. They can't take in pure nitrogen. It has to be in forms that they take in, and then they'll utilize it. So I don't think that's a big problem now. And trees do reduce pollutants. They're great for cleaning the air, and you know that's why trees are really beneficial to us. So I don't want anybody out there to hate trees because they fell on their, you know, crushed their car, fell on their house. Trees are great. They pay us back in so many ways.
Thanks for the call. Let me get that. Looks like Kelsa from Royersford to join us. And Kelsa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I have kind of a multi-part question. And just to preface this, I am a tree lover, and I can't stand the thought of taking down a tree. So I'm trying to salvage what we've got.
Gotcha.
The problem is we have 3 80-foot conifers that are 15 feet from our house. And they're in a triangular pattern, and they're 6 feet apart. So they're very close together. They're these huge trees. And what I would love to do is take them down to about 20 feet and still utilize them for, like, a play structure, treehouse or something.
Right.
Without jeopardizing the house. Is that in any way possible, or would that just kill them?
Well, you know, Kelsa, I have to say, our guests are looking at each other with this, like, what the heck look on their face. But, Kelsa, that's fine. Can we toss that back to you, Jason?
Well, probably not. If you're talking about reducing an 80-foot tree to a 20-foot tree, that's what we call severe bonsai. And the trees probably won't survive. However, the treehouse may, you know, because the trees will die, and that'll be great for the treehouse. But if it sounds like it's you can build treehouses in existing 80-foot trees without hurting the trees, but to take the tree down to 20 feet, I doubt it.
Yeah, and it sounds like you feel the same way about that, Mindy. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me ask you a question about just, I mean, spring is apparently going to be coming this year. Is there anything we need to do besides looking at the trees that got beat up by the winter, but need to do for our trees once spring actually arrives?
Yeah, so the best thing that you could do for your trees is to flush out the salt that has been gone into the soil from the de-icing salt, and then to mulch. Mulch helps also to put the nutrients into the soil that help the trees to be able to to uptake water, oxygen, nutrients from the soil.
And wait till the temperatures are in the 50s, 60s, something like that, to do all that?
Well, even if they're not, as soon as you start seeing the bud expansion and bud break for trees, you have to be out there doing this.
You agree with that, Jason?
Yeah, and the other thing is for storm-damaged trees, there are ways to treat these trees to bring them back, to restore them, if that's possible. So you can start hiring an arborist to prune these trees so that that's possible. And it's a small and it may be that your arborist will have to come back every second year or third year to guide the tree back to a good structure. So that kind of pruning, it's small doses over a longer period of time.
Do people often over-prune? Is that a problem?
Yeah, it is a problem, and that's one of the things about, as I said before, educating yourselves. Because if you over-prune a tree, the leaves are the tree's powerhouse. And if you take off the leaves, the tree is going to do everything it can to put them back on. And it does so, and it may not be good for the structure of the tree. And so you want to just give the right pruning dose. Never remove more than 25 or 30% of the canopy of the tree at any one time. And then if you remove 25%, let's say, you should let the tree sit for 1 or 2 years and then prune in the subsequent year.
Yeah, go ahead, Dominique.
I'd just like to give a plug for the big bake sale that the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society puts on every year, the Philadelphia Flower Show, which opens on Saturday.
That's right.
And it's all about learning. And at the flower show, there'll be Bartlett tree experts are there with a booth, and they speak at the gardener studio. They're also having a workshop on Thursday, next Thursday. That's the tree care update. And these are all great opportunities to get some hands-on experience with pruning and tree care.
And if you want deeper information, the Mars Arboretum through the School of Arboriculture runs classes for professionals. Now, anybody can sit in and gain knowledge from those, and those are really deep knowledge about trees.
Let me get, looks like Debbie from Glenside to join our conversation. Hi, Debbie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
One of the trees that was, I'm fine.
Good.
One of the trees brought down by our big storm was a tree that provided seclusion for an upper deck, and of course I want to replace it, and I wonder if your guest could help me with what kind of tree would get about 30 feet high, because it was in the upper deck,
right?
Be beautiful, not pyramidal like a pine, but just a beautiful spreading kind of tree that doesn't have some like problems coming with it, like disease, you know, maybe it's a little disease resistant and not with invasive roots.
And not with
any suggestions, I would really appreciate.
Well, you have a very specific list there. What do you think, Mindy?
Well, a 30-foot tall tree is considered a relatively small tree. And for that, you could consider, if you're looking at a native tree, maybe a dogwood, a flowering dogwood, or eastern redbud. Honey locust is a little bit taller than that. You don't want pyramidal, but a ginkgo tree is a great tree in that it, and many of them are known male, so they won't produce the berries that people don't like.
The stinky berries?
The stinky, yeah, stinky ginkgo, stinko ginkgo. and that's a beautiful tree that has great fall color and very interesting elements to the leaves.
Anything? Right, and when choosing a tree, you have to think about what you want out of the tree. Is it fall color? Is it fruits? Is it flower? Do you want screening? And then you have to look at your site. Is it well-drained? Is it sunny? Is there a problem with the wind? And all these things could guide you into a tree choice. And there are tree choice calculators, I guess you call them, online, that you can just type in all these things and it'll spit out what are good species for you.
Let me get Lisa from Montgomery County to join us on Radio Times. And Lisa, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick question about bamboo. I have a lot of bamboo in my backyard. It came down during the ice storm.
Yep.
It's laying down, but the bamboo hasn't actually broken. Mm-hmm. So I have two quick questions. Is it going to bounce back? And if it's not going to bounce back, how do I get it removed? Bamboo tends to be somewhat prolific, and I don't want it to expand beyond the point that it already is. So having it lay down, what's the impact of that?
What do you think, Jason?
Well, I have about an acre of bamboo that when I bought my house, I was going to cut it down, but it really charmed me. And it's the same thing. It's laying down. And what I've observed is that if it melts, it'll come back if it's not broken. And if it doesn't come back, you can just cut the individual canes, and if they're in good shape, you can actually sell them. People will buy them for tomato cages, things like that. But to stop it from spreading, when the bamboo puts up its new shoots, you can just go down and kick those over very easily, and you can eat the tops as well as bamboo shoots, but you can kick those over and it'll stop it from spreading. But bamboo can be very aggressive, so you just have to stay on top of it, or it'll grow where it wants to.
Do you have a position on bamboo, Mindy? I'm looking at your face. I think we tapped into something here. No, go ahead.
I once tried to make rain sticks out of bamboo. It's good for art, but it's bad for the environment.
Why do you say that?
Well, it's just a nasty invasive, and you can't control it. So if you, unless you put very deep barriers in the soil to stop it from getting out. If you have it in a contained area, it's okay, but otherwise it's real invasive.
And we're almost out of time here, but invasive is something we have to keep our eyes on, right?
We do. We have to keep our eye on invasive things, especially in our wooded areas where trees have come down and now the sunlight is hitting the ground. We're going to see invasives popping up, vines and other kinds of things that we need to control early so that and one of the best things we can do is replant trees, native trees in those mm-hmm. areas. So that those invasives don't come up.
I'm feeling you will be very busy. Both of you are very busy, and we appreciate the fact that you joined us in this hour of Radio Times. Thanks very much.
Oh, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Mindy Maslin, Project Manager of the Pennsylvania Horticulture Society's Tree Tenders Program. And again, it's a program that trains volunteers. They work in neighborhoods in and around Philadelphia, taking care of trees. Jason Lubar, Associate Director of Urban Forestry at Morris Arboretum of the University of Pennsylvania, also a board-certified Master Arborist. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. That's our homepage. You can join a conversation there and learn much more about Radio Times. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, thank you for all those programs, all those phone calls. We appreciate the programs as well. And the program is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.